Well, hey, I'm Craig Sibley, and I am a worship leader and a tech team, former tech team leader, this is my home church at Ocean Hills, and I also work for Avion, which is, I don't know if you, have you heard of the Avion company?
I actually haven't. This is the first time I've heard of it.
Avion does a variety of products. Probably the most popular currently is a personal monitor mixing station.
Yes.
And out of that grew this whole other side of what we're doing these days, which is distributed audio. Now, a lot of the concepts I'm going to be talking about today are general concepts, but I'm using the Avion things as kind of the, you know, the model for how you do this, because there's a variety of different ways that you can do it. one of the most common right now is the use of Ethernet with a protocol like CobraNet or EtherSound. We've got a simpler way to do it, and so that's why I'm going to kind of use our model to show you how we get a lot of audio around in the church, whether it be digital snakes or full campus integration. More and more, it seems that a lot of churches are going to these kind of multi-venue sort of things, like Saddleback has, you know, 8 different big tents that they have different worship styles at each one of the tents. I think they've got like one that's a traditional worship venue, another that's more of a contemporary, another one that's more of a kind of an X generation, more, you know, younger kind of thing. I think they've even got a country, you know, country western worship style. So what it becomes really difficult, though, when you're trying to get that audio around this facility, you know, there's traditional copper snakes just doesn't cut it. But before we get going in that, you know, I'd like to just have a little word of prayer, if you guys don't mind. Lord, I thank you for this cool opportunity of just getting to meet new people and the ability to get to know these folks. And we just ask, Lord, that before we talk about any technology, that you help us to keep the focus on what it is that we're trying to do, which is to glorify you through the work that you have put in front of us. So, Lord, I just ask that you would help us to be proficient at what we do. Use this time that it might be beneficial to you. And we just praise you for all the things that are happening during this conference and the cool work that's happening. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. So the way that this all got started, and I'm just going to start with our most basic device to show you how it kind of grew into the system.
Now you have a different, you have a class just on this too, right?
Just on this, yeah. So I'm only going to touch briefly on this little mixer thing to show you how it grew into this whole other this huge thing that we're finding out is now becoming what may end up being the full force of our company. But each, if you see this little teeny box right here, that's a little personal mixer. And every performer gets one of these little 16-channel mixers. The performers adjust their own mixes when they want it and as they need it. So you're not always screaming at the sound man, I need more of me in the monitor, right? Mixes for every different musician is completely independent and separate and designed to support their particular performance.
So there's no actual monitor on a stage. This is
their
monitor.
Well, you can. You can have these. The question was, I'm supposed to repeat the question. Actually, I think that they can,
Mike can
hear you just as well as me saying
it.
So the idea is the best way to use this system is with in-ear monitors, you know, an actual in-ear. However, we're not anti-wedge because in some applications, a wedge is going to fit the particular application better. So our units will actually...
Give a couple of examples.
Sure. One example would be backing vocalists. Sometimes it doesn't make sense if you got 20 backing vocalists to have them on in-ears because by the time they come up on stage and get plugged in, it would just be a big, confusing mess. So having wedges for a large group of backing vocalists is one reason. The other thing with backing vocalists, for instance, it's all about blending. And if you give each musician their own, or each one of those backing vocalists their own mixer, suddenly you're focusing on yourself and it's not blending anymore. Mm-hmm. So you have to be cautious with those things. Maybe even if you've got, say, four backing vocalists, well, they could definitely be on in-ears, but they would share the same mix because you want them to be able to blend. The other reason is that there are some people that just will not wear in-ear monitors. It's like, I don't even want to talk about it, man. You know, in those instances, you know, for the sake of unity, let them have a wedge. But I believe that the more that you can get the speakers off the stage, the better the front of the house is going to sound, the better you're going to be able to handle volumes. And just in general, it's just a better way to go. So,
how does a bass, bass guitar work through in here?
It works great.
That's one of the biggest challenges in ours with a smaller church.
Right. Bass and drums are two areas where I think that it's important to also have a feel, to be able to feel it. Because, you know, it's not just about listening. You can listen to a kick drum, and as a bass player, trying to lock in on that kick drum is difficult if you can't feel it. So there's a real cool company called Butt Kicker, and it's a Christian company, by the way, Butt with two T's. And the website that you can visit is called thebuttkicker.com. Now, this company, and this isn't the only company that does it, by the way, but what they do is they make a low-frequency motor that actually will give you the feel of the low frequencies that you're going to want to experience with a bass or with a drum. For the drummer, it actually is a little driver that sits on the bottom of the drum throne and gives them a little tactile sensory experience of feeling that low end. The bass player would stand on this little platform that's got the driver on it. So when you're standing on it, you're getting the full tactile feeling of this sound.
How does that work? With this? It just sits on a platform and the sound comes up?
It's a little platform that's sound isolated from the stage, and it's got this little device on it that actually makes the whole thing move. And, you know, it's quite amazing, too. I experienced this once where I was standing right next to the platform. You can't hear anything because it's completely isolated. You don't hear anything coming from the platform. Mm-hmm. Put the in-ears in, stand on that platform, and it suddenly feels like you're getting hit with 140 dB of glorious sound. You know, I mean, it's really an amazing thing. Shania Twain is touring right now, using 32 of these on stage. And everybody in the band is able to stand on them or sit on them or something to get the experience of feeling that sound, because a lot of playing has to do with the feel. So that's something that works in conjunction with in-ear monitors quite well. And they're surprisingly inexpensive. They don't cost that much. So it's a neat thing. If you're using in-ear monitors, it helps a bunch. But anyway, I'm doing a whole other class on in-ear monitoring, so I don't want to dwell too much on that in this class, because I want to talk more about how do we get stuff around, you know, as far as distributing that audio around. The mixer itself, this is what it looks like. And I've got some down here in the plaza that if you want to hear, I've actually got it so you can come up and mix six different little things. And, you know, it's a pretty cool system. So the system architecture of way the basic system works is that we have a console, and that console's direct outs or the inserts or the aux sends, the bus or the group outputs, and the line, any line-level device can be plugged into this box. There's essentially 16 inputs on the back of the unit, and it's line-level inputs. There is a little switch for the gain level you can see right there, so you can switch in, you know, for a pad effect if you want to bring up the gain or drop it. And those 16 channels now are converted into 24-bit, 48 kilohertz digital signal. We call it ANET, and ANET is different, completely different than Ethernet. It uses a Cat5 cable, but it's not Ethernet. The problem with Ethernet is that Ethernet's, well, originally it was designed to network computers, and share files and that sort of thing, where speed is not the most important thing. But when you're talking about live sound, speed is everything. It better get there in time, or if you end up with delays or latency, it's going to cause all kinds of problems with monitoring and being able to play together. We're able to deliver audio from the analog input to the analog output, so the, including the A to D and D to A conversion, sub-millisecond latency, which is faster than you can deliver sound through the air. Sound through the air is delayed approximately 1 millisecond every foot it has to travel. So if you have a 30 to 40 foot wide stage, by the time the drum sounds come across that stage, it's already delayed 40 milliseconds. That's definitely enough to get into a situation where you're going to start messing with your groove. It's going to mess things up.
As far as translating that into miles per hour, because of what does sound travel,
3,300? 773 miles per hour at 70 degrees Fahrenheit. Yes. And it is temperature dependent.
That's twice as fast as air then.
Exactly. Now, that's how fast sound travels through air. Ours, as far as how fast it's traveling through, you can't quantify it that way, because we're able to do 0.85 microseconds 50 miles away. So, you see, you can't even quantify it the same way. We can do 50 mile using fiber optic, where we can get it from point A to point B in 0.85 microseconds, 50 miles away. So at that point, it's like I'd have to do the math, but it's screaming.
That's fast. So I'm not understanding how this signal comes out. Is it like a snake, similar to a snake?
Yeah, just out? From this point, from the console to the input box, it's just using a simple little short analog snake. Now, with... Yamaha, I'm sorry?
Is this unit going to be on the sound booth, or is this on stage?
This is on at the sound booth. That would be at the sound booth.
Okay.
All right, so we come out of the console with a little jumper into the box with 16 different outputs. This is at the very basic side of things. I'm going to show you in a minute. We go way beyond that.
Well, I mean, usually you're coming out of it like an aux, then you're sending your signals.
Yes, but see, the thing here is that this allows you to use something other than an aux send. You can use the direct outputs of the console. So you could take out just the kick drum, just the snare drum, the lead guitar, the rhythm guitar, and supply those separately for the things that you do want to mix together. Like if you wanted to take the drum kit and supply it as a stereo feed, you'd come off of one of the buses. But you don't even have to use the auxes anymore. The auxes now are freed up to be used for something, whatever else you want to use.
So you're using the line in outs that you're usually using for a compressor or a...
Sure, gate. You can use one side of the inserts. Many consoles have a direct output right on the channel strip beyond the inserts, but you can definitely pull it off of the send side of the inserts as well.
So can you double up on these and still have one person use this?
Absolutely.
Oh, you can?
Mm-hmm. So... But that is a little beyond the scope of where I want to go today.
Exactly. Okay. Right back into the
yeah, but model. But the thing is that to give you an idea, Barry Manilow has got this big review at the Hilton in Vegas. 72 people in his orchestra, and every single one of those people on the band are on our mixer.
I'm glad I'm not wiring that.
You know, it's actually pretty simple, because you're just running Cat 5 cable around. Mm-hmm. Now, if you've got a Yamaha console, like a Yamaha, the new Y7CL, or excuse me, M7CL, or the DM2000, you know, in the various digital consoles that Yamaha makes. We've got this 16OY1 card, which is a digital card that goes right in the back of the console. At that point, you just plug in a Cat5 cable right into the back of the console, and you're there. No analog connection whatsoever. We also have one for the Digico consoles, and I understand there's quite a few other manufacturers that want to implement these into their devices. So we're going to be seeing this become more common. So it's distributed down a Cat 5, and I will say it's a Cat 5E cable. You can't. It's very difficult to even buy Cat 5 anymore. Most of the stuff you go down to purchase is going to be Cat 5E. Cat 5E is just like Cat 5, except the four twisted pair that are inside the cable are twisted a little tighter. What we're telling folks these days is go ahead and put Cat 6 in. It's completely compatible. The only difference there is that those twisted pair are even more tightly twisted. And the other caveat that I would say is that if you outfit the church with, you know, either Cat 5E or Cat 6, get the cheap stuff, get the unshielded. You don't want shielded cable when you're doing data transmission. Shielded is good for audio, bad for data. The reason is that what happens inside that cable is that it causes internal crosstalk because the RF can't get out of the cable. So you can have data corruption. So don't use shielded cable for digital audio. You can do up to 64 channels on a single cable. Now the way we're doing it in the current thing that I'm going to talk about first here is that we're running 16 channel streams on each one of the four twisted pair. So 16 times 4, we got 64. I'm going to show you, though, in the new product that we're releasing, how we can do 128 channels on only two pair. So we're really kicking it out. It is 24-bit, 48K uncompressed audio, which some of the other things out there, they're doing all kinds of compression schemes. This is completely uncompressed, so it's broadcast quality audio. As we already talked about, it's sub-millisecond latency, and we can do very long cable runs as compared to Ethernet, which you're limited to 300 feet with Ethernet. We can do 500 feet with any box until it hits another box, and then it's refreshed and can go another 500 feet.
No. Sorry, I gotta get this.
No problem.
Now, again, you're saying Ethernet. What's considered Ethernet?
Ethernet would be, it's a standard protocol used in the computer industry that a lot of folks are trying to run digital audio down and with not too much success.
But the same cable?
It's exactly the same cable.
Okay.
And the same kind of connector. It's the. It looks like the cable that you plug in your computer into the wall. Mm-hmm. The other thing is that when you're dealing with Ethernet stuff, like computers and such, you get into this big mess with Ethernet of configuring what are known as TCP/IP addresses. You don't have to do any of that with our stuff. You just plug it all in and it works. You don't have to have a computer that you sit out and assign all these different addresses and such. So you just basically you plug it all in and it works without having to configure anything. So there's a couple of ways that you can configure the different connections. In serial connections, basically we have an input module, and we simply daisy chain the various devices to it. Now in this instance, again, I'm still using my mixer situation as a model, but we're going to take it way beyond that in a minute. So basically I come into the input module from the console, and then it just basically loops from one mixer to the next, to the next, to the next. If I do this, though, with the mixers, I have to supply power to each one of these mixers with a little wall wart. The other thing is that you're actually going to have three cables on your mic stand if you're putting the little mixer there, because you're going to have one cable going up to it, one cable coming back down from it, and a cable supplying power to it, so it's three cables. If I do it in a parallel connection, what we do is we've got the input module that's going to a distributor. The distributor then does direct runs to each one of these mixers, supplying the power as well. So now there's only one cable being run to those mixers. Then in that, you can do any combination from that point on. Use of more distributors or daisy chaining from that. You know, there's really... It just depends on your application.
So once you daisy chain, you don't need a mixer.
Anytime you daisy chain, you are going to need an additional power supply
for the second one.
Right, but you know, with a distributor, it's always going to distribute the ANET signal and the power as well. So these here, that see where I daisy chain this?
You're going to lose power there.
Yeah, this one's not going to get power. Okay. This one is, because it's getting from a distributor.
Got it.
But the cool thing here is that what I'm showing is that it really doesn't matter what configuration you want to use. You've got your choice of doing it any way you want.
What would be the advantage to go from the mixer to the distributor and then back to the mixer again? Just because it gives you more?
Yeah, if see this particular distributor is hitting this mixer, then it's going to another distributor that could be going out to additional mixers, supplying the power to those additional mixers.
He's talking about the little personal
monitor mixers, yeah. When I speak of mixers, not the big front-of-house console, but the monitor mixer.
And going through the distributor, if you, I think you stepped out, but that now supplies power.
Right.
Because I don't think he's seen your previous slide that showed the...
I think you came in when I talked about this, right?
Oh, I got just the tail end.
Basically, the way this is a simple daisy chain, where I've got my front-of-house console here. I'm coming into the input module, and I'm simply daisy chaining from mixer to mixer to mixer.
Right.
But when I do that, each one of these little mixers needs to be supplied with a little wall wart for power.
Okay.
But this, on the other hand, supplies the power and the ANET signal to each. Now, I can do 500 feet between any of these devices, and that's including here. So anywhere I go from device to device, I get another 500 foot because it's refreshed and it's passed on. I'm going to talk about a fiber channel bridge in a minute, which can really kick it out if you need to. So you can get some incredible distances going on here. This is one of the simple distributors. This is our inexpensive version where I have 8 outputs. And if you notice on the back, I've got a power port where you're literally using 8 little wall warts with this distributor. And they come out and they plug into
that's
a script.
How it has to operate?
This particular one.
Okay.
And this is the budget model. I'll be honest with you, probably 3/4 of the ones we sell are the next one I'm going to show you. We
only one wall port.
Yeah, we sell very few of these. And then there's a 9th power supply, and that actually powers itself. So you need 9 little power supplies. I will say that these little power supplies are really skinny. And I can show you one. I've got one downstairs, that they'll actually fit in a standard plug strip side by side. So they're not like the wall warts that, like, you know, like lay over 3 different plugs. This actually, they fit really nicely, you know, all right next to each other. Now, this is the Pro Distributor. The Pro Distributor has a power AC cable that plugs into the wall. It's rack mountable, and at that point, 3/4 of what we sell is this particular product here, because it's just more of a permanent installation. It's just a cleaner way to deal with it. So, you know, you're going to end up with a lot of consistent monitor mixes, a lot of save time in sound check, increased rehearsal time, and true stereo mixing. In all of this. So that's kind of a brief thing on our mixer system. Now, here's what happened. We had an input box. And somebody said, well, gosh, you gave me an input box. If you give me an output box, we got a snake, right? So got an input on one side, run it 500 feet, take it out on the other side, it's a snake. And then not only that, I can use those 4 twisted pair to take it even further with more channels. So I can go from the traditional copper analog snake to one single cable to do 64 channels of going to and from the stage. The input module is this module right here, the top here, and it's labeled an I, which means input. I call it the Gazinta box because that's where stuff goes into. And then you got your output box, which is the exact opposite side. So that's the Gazouta box because stuff goes out of it. And that's the O box. Now, once we did these 2 boxes, the immediate response was, well, that's really great if you want to do line-level stuff, but I got microphones and instruments. What do I do about that? So we had to come up with a mic pre, and that's what this device is. That's an AN16IM, as in microphone. They're very high-quality mic pres. As a matter of fact, people that hear these, the Golden Ear Boys and those kind of folks out there, they say that this is one of the nicest mic pre's that they've heard, especially as a 16-channel device like this. It also has a passive split on it, so you can actually take it out and throw the analog into something else if you want. But once you hit this box, either one of the input boxes, it's converted to ANET at that point. And there's 16-channel devices.
Is that exclusive mics in general? That's not specifically vocal mic. That's just mic.
Any mic, because it actually does have phantom power on it.
Okay.
So you can use condenser mics. Mm-hmm. It also has it's switchable per channel.
Okay.
And it also has phase reverse, so you can switch the phase. It's got variable gain as well as some pads, so it's got all the stuff you'd expect on a mic pre. However, that being said, it works fine in some applications, but not in all. Because the thing is that has to live on the stage. So in the sound check, you set your basic gain level to get it down the tube, but then it's a set it and forget it gain level. You're not going to be running up to the stage every time you want to do a little trim. So that is that side of it. I'm going to show you in a moment.
That's where it reflects to the monitor.
Not just for monitors. We're going to talk about how this is used in a snake, so stay with me here.
And how it gets down to the board.
Right, exactly. So here we have a simple input module going to an output module. Keep in mind that this input module now that we've discussed, we've got two, can either be line-level devices or microphone devices. By the way, that input has got those cool little XLRs with a quarter-inch jack in the middle of it. So you can plug an XLR into it. You can also plug a guitar cable right into it. So it'll accept either line level or mic stuff.
On
the same plug.
Well, that's a trick.
Yeah, it's really cool because you're not having to hunt around for little, adapters and stuff.
Does anybody else make that?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah,
I
believe it's made by Neutrik. And it's a standard kind of a thing. But
I just seen it recently, but I've seen it on the internet. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's a neat thing because then you're not limited to what kind of cable you plug into. Yes, I do. I can show that to you. So this is a simple input to output. Now, we can have unlimited daisy chaining of the output boxes. So think of it this way. It's unlimited splits. In a copper snake, doing a split off of a 16-channel snake is a chore, and it's expensive. You've got all kinds of potential for grounding issues, that sort of thing.
Sub-snake you're talking about?
I'm sorry?
Like a sub-snake?
A split, which gives it... let's say you've got a 16-channel copper snake. You want to use that so that you're getting 16 channels from the stage to the front-of-house console.
Okay.
But you want to pull that off and run it over to a Pro Tools rig, right? Or a recording station.
Okay.
Or a broadcast truck. Or whatever, there's so many different, a video room or whatever. To do that with an analog system, it's expensive because you've got line transformers that have to be used. There's all kinds of potential for grounding. It's just not easy to do. With our system, you just add output modules. And every single one of these is doing exact duplicate audio at the output. There's no degradation in any of these devices.
Now, how hard is that to wire and put another output on it?
It's just take one little Cat5 cable and
that's it,
plug it to the output to the next box. It's extremely simple.
And that's same with the input to the output. That's a Cat5, that's it?
That's right.
Is that one?
Just one Cat5. Now watch, it gets even more interesting. Here I got an input module going to an output module, and using the expansion jacks, I'm now doing 32 channels from this side of the configuration to the output side. It's 32 channels, so I got 17 through 32 coming 17 through 32 out on this, on the same cable. At this point, I'm just still only plugging Cat5 cables to Cat5 cables, and it's a very simple thing. And all of these little arrows here can have lengths of 500 feet. So you can start spooling these things all over a facility. And still unlimited daisy chaining. So if I've got a recording room and I want to pull these off and go into that recording room, it's just a matter of connecting another Cat5 cable and going to more output boxes. Now here's how we use the expansion. On each unit, we have outputs, expansion. So we're going the output into the expansion jack of the second input module. Here's the 500-foot run to from, say, the stage to the console, and that comes out of the output into the second input. So I've got 16 channels going over to this output, 1 through 16, and 17 through 32 going into this one coming out over here. So 32 channels through the one Cat5 cable.
So why isn't it going from the one that you have on the bottom there out to the expansion like you have the first one? Why is
because since I have four twisted pair on a Cat5 cable, the expansion jacks act as little railroad track routers. If it's coming in here on the first box and it goes into this expansion jack, what it's doing is that it's pulling it out and putting it on a different pair on the cable. Mm-hmm. To pull that back off of that cable, I have to come out of the expansion jack so okay. that it'll pull those channels out correctly. Mm-hmm. Now, it's going to get a little more complicated here because here's what's going to happen. Well, actually, this is kind of cool. This is simple. Here's how I can do bidirectionality. All I have to do is switch an input module with an output module. Now I've got 16 channels coming from here, going out over here, 16 channels coming from this side and coming out over here, simply by changing the position of the two boxes.
Why would you want to do that?
That's a 16 by 16 snake now. I could do 16 channels coming from the stage, mic instrument stuff coming to the front of house console.
Oh.
And I can send it back to the stage to come out of my power amps and hit the mains. So, you know, in a snake, you traditionally would have a 32 by 16 or something like that. So this is a 16 by 16. Mm-hmm. So I can move any of the modules around and basically have any configuration I want. Now, here is where we get into the big channel stuff. Here I have 48 channels of input modules, 48 channels of output modules. I have one input module on this side for 16 channels and one output module on this side for 16 channels. To do this, though, the expansion jacks stop at 32 channels. We have to use what's called a system bridge. And all it is a little teeny box about this big, and it fits basically behind the rack. So you screw it onto the back of the rack, and all these input modules and output modules plug into this little box, and it's got a single run that goes to another one of these little system bridge boxes and breaks them back out. And all that's doing is it's routing to those four separate twisted pair on the cable. So it's just a physical router is all it does. But it's a pretty sophisticated system. If you look at that, that's a 48 by 16. So it's 48 sends, 16 returns on one Cat5 cable. Now, some sound companies are getting really smart. Let's say they do an event, Disneyland or, you know, these different places that they do at hotels and things like that. They run Cat5 up through the tiled ceiling, and they leave it there. And then they come back 2 months later to do another event, and they pull down the Cat5 cable, plug it in on each side, and they're on. They're going. So it's a unique kind of a thing. You know, there's no need for the big, clunky, you know, heavy copper snakes anymore. This is what that little system bridge looks like. Basically an A, B, C, and D input, and here's the single output that goes, you know, for the long length. Now, the only thing that's a caveat here is that what you put on an A, if you want to get it out on the other side, make sure that you plug A into the output side. So, you know, you want to keep the pairs together. So we can eliminate analog snakes through a situation like this. So we're going from the stage to the front of the house, and there's my mic pre's, right? The IM for mic. Mm-hmm. So I have 32 channels coming in, going into the system bridge, goes 500 feet to another system bridge, and then we're coming out into the console. Mm-hmm. Now, coming back the other way, I want to send up to the amplifiers. So I can come out of the console. Traditionally, what's done is that you come out of the console and you run into your DSP, like crossovers and that sort of thing. it's going to break it all out to the different amplifiers that are powering the various banks of speakers. So you got two channels being run for the subs, two channels run for the mids, another two channels for the mid-highs, and another two channels for the highs. So you can see the amount of outputs now that need to be routed up to the other side of the stage can start to get substantial. So I can do 16 channels coming out on this side and bringing them out over here, hitting the amplifiers. Now, the only thing missing in this equation is the monitoring side of it. So we got a nice little solution for that. We plug in another input module, and on the other side, we go to a distributor, and they go out to all the different mixers, the Avion mixers that we're talking about. So now the mix system is on the same backbone as our snake system. See, and it's able to keep that all straight and separate. And then in addition, I can come off of that output module, run to a different output module, and run to a recording studio, a broadcast truck, or any other sanctuary that you might want to run to. So it gives you the option of building this system way beyond you could ever do with copper snakes.
So how do you convert that? I mean, on the out, if you're going to a recording and it doesn't have a Cat 5.
No, it's the out. Each one of the outputs has physical analog outputs.
Oh, okay.
So all you do though is that you run this. This is a Cat 5 coming out of this one, but it goes to another output box, which has analog outputs.
I see.
Now, however, I'll say we're also right now working on a new card for Yamaha consoles and other recording devices and such that you'll be able to plug right into some of these devices and take it in ANET. Never even having to break it back out analog. If we're recording in digital, why not keep it all in digital? So that's the other side of what we're doing. Here's the ANET over fiber I was talking about. This is interesting that we can take ANET, convert it to a fiber channel network or a fiber channel run. Are you familiar with fiber optics?
Like in your audio, fiber optic audio?
Yeah, very similar thing. The only difference is that it is true glass instead of a polymer. So you can run this thing ridiculous lengths. In this situation, you can go 1.6 miles in multi-mode fiber. And if you really want to get silly, you can go 50 miles in single mode. So it'll get you there.
50 miles away, a little hard to get the house that way.
Yeah. I could just see, you streaming along, from house to house. And he's like, oh, well, yeah, our sanctuary is 3 blocks away. And it's like... So in summary, you've got improved monitor control, improved front of house sound because we're lowering those stage levels, flexibility and expanded signal transport. We can really kick it out in any configuration we want, and it's a very cost-effective use. Honestly, this stuff, when you spec it out, if you're looking at traditional copper snakes, that sort of thing, it works out almost identical in price. But when you consider splits, if there's a need for these splits that I'm talking about, it's actually less expensive. It's so easy to set this stuff up. Like I said, it's just a matter of plugging in Cat 5 cables. Now, that all being said, that was our first chip that we designed. Aviom is a chip development company. We design our own technology. Which I really love being a part of this company, and some of the companies I've worked for in the past, we were always waiting for the computer industry to hand feed us technology that we'd be able to apply into the applications that we wanted. With this company, they design what are called application-specific integrated circuits, or ASICs. Our first chip was the Pro 16 product line that I just showed you. We're just on the precipice of releasing our new chip and line of products, and it's called Pro 64. First and foremost, I'll say that all of the stuff we already have works with what's coming. So I'm very happy about that because we've got a lot of loyal customers, and we don't want to leave people in the dirt. So all of the new stuff will work with the old stuff.
So if I'm hearing what you're saying instead of being a 16, they're going to give you a 64 for stage?
Or you just stack
the 16s to make 64 or what?
I'll show you in a minute.
Okay.
Because it's really interesting. It's 128 channel capability on one Cat 5 cable. With full duplex, meaning I can get from anywhere to anywhere. I don't have directionality anymore. Once you get on the network, it can be pulled out anywhere. Okay, so we looked at all this stuff going on, and we optimized this particular protocol specifically for delivering audio in that sub-millisecond latency spec. That was very important. You know, it's really easy for any manufacturer to provide any one of these following features. Low latency, if that's all you're focused on. Or high channel count, again, if that's what you're focusing on. Variable sample rates, low jitter or wander specification. Are you guys familiar with digital audio as far as clocking issues or...
Sampling?
Issues of jitter, yes. It has a lot to do with sampling. I'll make it real quick. I'll say this little thing is that when digital recorders first came out, people didn't like the way they sounded because they sounded kind of glassy, kind of thin. Mm. Well, the big issue was is that there was a lot of clock jitter. Clock jitter will basically affect your sound because you're not getting accurate representation of the production of that sound on the output side. The reason for that is that if the clock's moving around, it can't take accurate pictures and reproduce it accurately on the other side. Mm. So what you need to do is clean that clock up so that it's rock solid so that what you get on input is going to translate to what you get on the output. They didn't know that in the beginning, and that's why, you know, like the Alesis ADAT, you know, they were neat, but people always were complaining that, you know, they were all right, they didn't sound that great, you know. But lately, you get some of these high-end digital recorders, and they sound smoking because they figured out this issue of clock jitter. The second thing is this issue of wander. Wander is where a clock will fall off of its clocking point to the point where the output device won't be able to even speak. It'll just say, I can't understand this clock, and it mutes. Now that's a big issue if you're networking, because if you're stacking a bunch of boxes all over the place, if you're specifically if you're daisy chaining boxes, if you're using an Ethernet specification like some of the competitors like CobraNet and EtherSound, if you try and daisy chain three boxes, by the time you get to the fourth, it won't know how to interpret the clock, and it won't even speak. It just mutes. We've been able to show in tests that we put 42 boxes in a serial configuration. And the first one, if you measure the clock and look at the clock on an audio precision known as an AP, the clock on the last one is virtually identical to the clock on the first one, which is really tough to pull out in a digital protocol. The only way we were able to do that is because we're doing streaming. We are doing a streaming protocol, whereas all the other ones are packeted, which means they're sending little packets of information. Anyway, that's as techie as I'll get there for a minute here. Also, you know, if you wanted to control other devices like MIDI or GPIO or RS-232, you know, like control information, yeah, you can provide that even with Ethernet. But, you know, basically what we're saying here is we are the only manufacturer to do all of that simultaneously. There's no one else that even comes close. There are other manufacturers that will provide any one of those things, but not all of it simultaneously. Now, if I compare what we were talking about with Pro 16, that works with groups of 16 channels at a time. So one stream equals 16 channels in those four twisted pair. All channels are always active. You can't turn them on or off. They just, when you plug them in, they're going. You've got the ability to do unlimited digital copies, multiple separate streams on a single cable, but every one of them is unidirectional. It has to go from point A to point B. It's what's known as half duplex. It's a fixed sample rate at 48 kilohertz, and there's no non-audio data. It is just audio data in that network. Now, Pro 64 works channel by channel. You have the ability to do separate channel routing and activation. you've got 64 channels integrated into one single stream, that one twisted pair, 64 channels on that Cat5 cable. Pro 64 is always bidirectional. It's always full duplex, meaning that it doesn't matter what direction I'm going. I can go upstream and I can go downstream. You've got variable sample rates from 44.1 kilohertz all the way up to 192 kilohertz. That's a misprint. And you've got non-audio data known as VDCs or virtual data cables. And I'll explain that in a moment. So in auto mode, there's two modes that this operates in. There's a auto mode and a manual mode. In auto mode, you just take boxes and plug in all the cables and everything magically works. In manual mode, you can do 128 channels, but you have to be very specific on the two jacks that are used on the back of the devices. There's an A jack and a B jack, and you really have to be thinking about how this thing is routed. But that's how you can take advantage of all these channels. Inputs can be anywhere on the system, and the outputs can be anywhere on the system. So if I look at a situation like this, this is, if you remember with the last little snake, I connect an input box to an output box. Topology is a fancy word for saying how it's connected. You remember how I showed serial connections and the direct routed stuff? It doesn't matter how you put this stuff together, it just will always work. So if I add output modules, I instantly get the splits we were talking about. And it doesn't matter here if you see this output module is on the other side of the input module, and I got two output modules over here, and they're all giving me duplicate audio. I've got the ability to add as many output boxes as I want. Now, this is going to be big, not so much for the church market, but huge for the broadcast market, because they've got an input somewhere, and they got to get it to all kinds of different outputs on facilities and that sort of thing. So more of an application in the broadcast realm. Now here's how it gets kind of neat. I've got basically what's called a channel range. And if I change those channel ranges, I can put an input box anywhere in the system and pull it out somewhere else by simply selecting the same channel range. Almost like tuning in a car. You know, out here in the parking lot, we've got all those cars out there. And in the airwaves around us, we have all these radio stations. Until you tune in that radio station on that car, you can't pull that audio out of the air, right? It's almost identical with this. You can broadcast and get in on the network. And anywhere on the network, simply by tuning in a range of channels, I can pull it out on an output box. Hmm. So there again, see, I changed the output on that output box, and I'm pulling out channels 17 through 32. Anywhere I want to do it. I'm not going to kill you guys, but this is showing you that you can get really crazy with the use of a bridge. Not a bridge, actually a hub. And this hub now, we're looking at a daisy chain configuration, but this is what would be called a star network. And one of the things that's very unique about our particular system is that I can maintain full duplex, that ability to go in any direction, over the hub. Usually with other systems, as soon as you use a hub, it becomes half duplex from that point on. Ours is able to communicate over the hub in both directions. All right, here's how, using these channel ranges, see, I'm bringing an input box over here, got my channel range assigned to that, and I simply pull it out here. And here I'm tuning in these channel ranges and pulling out any of those different channels simply by changing the channel range on that output box. And then I can add as many as I want. So it gets a little silly here. But see, this is the kind of thing that if you're building a big facility and you want to have stuff all over the campus, you want to have no limitations of what you can pull out, you can do it with this system. This is overkill for a lot of church environments.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things, though, that if the backbone is there, what a lot of people are doing is that when they build a new facility, they lay Cat5. It's just built right into the thing. And then at that point, it doesn't matter, you know, if you throw this thing in the children's ministry and you want to get the children's ministry audio over the recording room, which may be on the other side of the campus, it's no problem. Just plug it into the network and pull it out over there. You don't even have to think about how you're routing. You just get on the network, and it's all there to share anywhere in the network. This is the input module. Looks very similar to our other product, but it's basically 16 inputs. One of the things that we're doing that's kind of neat is that you can use either XLR inputs or what I personally like, which is DB25 connectors. It's a little parallelogram-shaped connector with pins on it so that you can actually have 8 channels in on one connector.
Does it look like a banana jack?
No, it's it looks more like a serial connector on a computer.
Oh.
But it actually carries all these analog channels of audio on this one connector. That's our output box, so it, you know, basically it's the Gazouta box instead of the Gazina. Now, here's where it gets interesting. You remember I was talking about the other product being a set-it-and-forget-it gain structure? The reason why it had to be that way is since it was half-duplex, the sound could come from the box to the front of house, but I could not communicate to that box to tell it to change something. In this system, since we're full-duplex, not only can I take the sound into this box and receive it back at the front-of-house console, but I got a little remote sitting at the console that I can tell that thing to change any channel's gain structure. So I'm able to have a remote controllable mic pre. So that way, if in the middle of the event or whatever your service, and you're noticing that the drummer's hitting them a little harder and you need to change the gain level on that input box, you can do that from your front of house position. The other thing that we're doing is working with Yamaha on the new card that we're developing. That our hope is that right from the Yamaha console, you're going to be able to change the gain structure of this box from the console. So that is, here's an in and out box. There's 8 channels in, 8 channels out. There's a digital I/O box that gives you AES EBU, which is a digital format that is commonly used with digital audio workstations like Pro Tools or Cubase or, you know, these different kinds of things out there. That's the merger hub we looked at, and that's just a patch bay. I thought there was more. There was something I wanted to show you. Okay. One last thing I want to talk about that I thought I had a screen for is this virtual data cables. Virtual data cables, there are 14 slots that allow you to control things like lighting and cameras, having a projection screen come down. And all of that control can be on this network at the same time you're doing all this audio. So you can basically, from the front of house, go, I want to bring up this bank of lights. You got a MIDI controller that's controlling the bank of lights, and it can be going down that same Cat5 cable as all your audio. So you can have 128 channels going on in that Cat5 cable, and in addition, 14 other elements to do control of any kind of thing that you want to do. All on the network simultaneously, and it never subtracts from the audio capabilities. I know this was like overkill, but I wanted to take it from like the simple to show you, you can take this through the roof if you want. We'll talk to you later. Thanks.